KQED.
For the most part, I think the problem in evaluations is not that districts across America think everybody's great. I think the problem is all evaluators, for the most part, many evaluators are overworked and under-resourced. And so this attempts to spread that out a little bit and also attempts to create greater alignment between what we expect to see in the classroom and everybody's understanding of how that should be documented or how evidence should be provided for that.
You know, the idea of sort of teachers being part of the process, was that a tough thing to build in or was that an easy get?
Well, for the most part, we started out with what should this evaluation system look like. And as we started to understand that it should involve a comprehensive narrative that made sense and that was understandable by multiple parties, it became clear that more people actually needed to be involved in the process. And it was very obvious that it couldn't strictly be administrators or administrative evaluators. If you wanted to have a quality process, teachers needed to be at the table. So for the most part, that wasn't a difficult sell. The district really agreed that teachers needed to have a voice in the process and that if everybody was behaving in a transparent way, that it wasn't a problem at all. So I actually don't think that was a major get.
It sounds to me as though something's built in here, whereas if you do really well, there's a career ladder here. Talk to me more about that.
So the career ladder concept is separate. So we really approached it in two different ways for our membership. Number one, that they recognized that our evaluation system was fundamentally inadequate for either identifying excellent work or providing support where teachers were struggling. We said, this is how we want to address that. Second, they absolutely understood that many educators were not being evaluated appropriately or fairly. So we said, we want to build an oversight and an accountability system that addresses that. And then on top of that, they were concerned that people who were evaluating them may not have experience in their grade level or in their subject area or may not have been classroom teachers or at all. And so we wanted to address that. So as we systematically deconstructed the concerns that we heard from our membership, we actually attempted to build a system that addressed those concerns. So when SJTA was able to communicate to its members how we were addressing their concerns, that they were overwhelmingly satisfied with the evaluation concept. There were some questions in the beginning. There were definitely some misconceptions, so we had to do a lot of work just creating better systems of communication to show people that this is the plan that actually is meant to address their concerns. In terms of the career ladder, there is still a lot of work to be done on that. It's not something that's currently funded because we don't want to fund we don't want to differentiate pay for teachers in that way. We think that our teachers' base salary isn't sufficient. You know, many, many years of cuts to public education in the state of California have left teachers hurting financially, and our goal is to pay everybody a living wage and then perhaps find outside funding to pay teachers special stipends to do work that they should be doing in terms of their leadership as professionals in the industry. That conversation is very different. We talk a lot about a uniform salary schedule, so teachers are paid for the work that they do. Adding this layer on top of it in order to recognize leadership outside the classroom or excellence and model performance inside the classroom is a very new place for our members to go. For the most part, they've been quite open to it, but it requires a great deal of trust and a promise that we'll approach it fairly and equitably in a way that makes sense to them.
I have heard teacher friends of mine comment on the need to try to engineer something that does keep good, strong teachers in the classroom and that, you know, what happens oftentimes is the only way to maybe get more pay or to, you know, get acknowledgement for what you're doing is to become like a master teacher and then you have to leave your classroom and teach others. And it would really be wonderful to have something in place that did sort of build in something that rewarded that and that kept you at your top level once you hit there. Is there anything in this that's doing that, or is that still down the road as well?
Well, the concept does exactly that. There are two different levels that that teachers could achieve, the model teacher and the master teacher leader. The model teacher concept is that teachers are recognized financially for what they do in the classroom already, for which they are extraordinary. They may already be informal mentors, or they may execute site leadership, but the idea is they earn the designation for already being outstanding, and the only requirement is that they continue to be open to the discussion of their practice and perhaps be a model for others. The master teacher leader idea is that a teacher could apply for a job. It's essentially a three-year project that has at its heart something that betters the processes and in our district for the improvement of student achievement. Both of these are 3-year contracts. The teachers could have them for multiple contracts, or they could rotate throughout the district depending on district need. They have substantially higher salaries, but those salaries aren't permanent. You earn them for the 3 years that you have that designation, and then you rotate back into the standard salary schedule.
That sounds pretty cool.
But it does, right, it does encourage that idea that teachers don't have to leave the classroom to make significant contributions to the district. And if they're contributing at that level, they deserve to be compensated at that level.
Yeah, sounds great. Tell me, you know, you're part of the education landscape of the country right now. I don't know if you looked around the country to see what other districts were doing well with regard to teacher evaluation, if you borrowed from anywhere in particular to pull this together, or do you think you've created something really different here?
Oh, no, we definitely looked at some excellent models around the country. Two, we studied quite a bit in Southern California and San Juan Unified and Poway, but we borrowed quite heavily from a really amazing program they do in Montgomery County, Maryland. It's their Peer Assistance and Review Program. They have a very robust program of teacher support and calibration for evaluation and professional development. And they were very kind to meet with us and very open to that conversation. So we took major elements of that because they had aligned with the vision for equality and accountability that we had kind of brainstormed before that. We were kind of didn't stumble on it by chance, but having read some of their work, we realized that we needed to access their experience so that we didn't, you know, work in a vacuum and maybe duplicate some of the lessons that they learned earlier in their experience. So they are doing amazing work out there, and they're very generous to share with us.
So you avoided, you know, the kind of talk that we've heard in L.A. about using test scores, you know, to tie to performance or to pay. Was that ever on the table? Did you have to fight that off, or was that never really a part of this?
Well, from the beginning, we had conversations about it. I mean, if a district isn't thinking about how do they tie test scores to teacher pay, given the general landscape of the so-called education reform movement these days, then they're not paying attention to pressure from everybody, from local parent groups to the federal government. Fortunately, our district is very open to the conversation that we brought to the table, which is there is zero data to support the idea of paying teachers to teach to tests actually improve student achievement or teacher performance. So, you know, we said, happy to talk about it. Just show us your research. You know, we have a ton of research to show that it doesn't work. Whatever you have that shows it does work, we're willing to talk about it. And the district recognized that we were very serious in the willingness to discuss it and that there was nothing to substantiate that as being a significant part of reforming education. So that conversation, it didn't die very quickly, but there was a lot of very high-level conversations about what actually improves student achievement and teacher performance. And that's consistent professional development, outstanding, thorough, and rigorous evaluation systems that actually support what happens in the classroom, and the ability of the teacher to say, here's where I want to work, here's where I think I need support, and the resources provided to actually improve that performance based on the perceived need and the actual need of the person doing the work in the classroom.
So when you think about everybody else out there sort of struggling with this issue now, any words of wisdom?
Sure. I mean, people talk a lot about the relationship between the San Jose Unified School District and the San Jose Teachers Association as being of paramount importance to have these conversations. And this isn't a relationship that appeared overnight. It's taken years of honest, direct, and transparent communication between district leadership and union leadership for these conversations to be even possible. There were times when it was not easy, when it was very awkward, because people in the room had made the commitment to set out honestly and openly what their needs were in order to move their organization forward and what the constraints and concerns were. The ability to have that conversation is absolutely predicated upon the belief that there is a transparent and open line of communication, that everything said in that room is confidential and is taken very seriously. That's the only reason why we were able to have those conversations, and it's not something that happened just because we started bargaining. We had to talk a lot about it. We had to have those open lines of communication, and we had to be willing to be honest and transparent at all times. And when things went badly, we had to stop and call it out and say, I think maybe what was said is being misinterpreted, or I have a concern about what was just expressed. And that's not easy. It's much easier to kind of sit back and say, well, the union wants this and they're being unreasonable, or the district wants this and they're being unreasonable. It's just a much different place to be.
Mm. People in the sort of critical in the education landscape, from, you know, Michelle Rhee to others, sometimes point to teachers' unions as if, you know, they're kind of the crux of the problem, right? They don't want change. They don't want reform. They're not really thinking about kids. They put their salaries first above, you know, career ladders or pay for program or whatever it is that business models show us work. Do you think this agreement in any way sort of is an answer to those sort of criticisms? I mean, what is your response to that?
It's interesting because the premise in the statement was that, you know, they reject, that teachers reject the things that business models show us work. And the fact that the business model in the education community is fundamentally the wrong direction to go. The business model says the more you pay somebody, the better they will perform, because the only reason they are performing is for the salary that you are giving them. And every educator I know comes to work every day in order to ensure that students in our communities are successful and that they thrive. And time again, the efforts in the business community to leverage the concept that penalizing teachers by lowering their pay or creating an incentive by increasing their pay, it just doesn't work because it's the wrong place to begin. Educators in our community know that there are significant problems in our educational systems, and they know that those problems do not begin and end with the people in the classroom. We've constantly reached out and asked for help, asked for assistance, identified areas of need, and have been told time and time again what we need is more standardized testing and fewer unions. And in reality, that's just not the case. Some of the most successful systems in the world rely neither on excessive standardized testing and are heavily unionized. What matters is when two organizations pull together in the same direction because they share the same vision and values, not just for the students in the classroom, but for the parents, the communities, and the employees that they are meant to serve.
So before I let you go, I want to return to one of the details of this agreement, which has to do, I think, with perhaps in the past there were automatic pay increases for teachers.
Yes.
And that will cease to exist. There will be increases based on these evaluations. It won't be an auto pay. So if you don't perform at a particular level, it's possible you will not see a pay increase, correct?
Correct. Our organization, the Teachers Union, was comfortable with that because of the incredible number of safeguards built into the new system. If a teacher is designated as needing the additional support that would be available to him or her through the Phase 2 process, that's what we call it when a teacher's received an unsatisfactory overall evaluation, then that means that a minimum of 7 people and up to 8 people have actually reviewed all of the evidence to substantiate that significant amount of professional support and development needed. So given that kind of safeguard, we were comfortable saying, yes, we agree then that a teacher doesn't necessarily need to advance automatically on the salary schedule. That seemed completely reasonable and appropriate, but not arbitrary or capricious.
Okay. And then, you know, one claim has always been that it's extremely difficult to fire teachers who are not good, who are dead wood, who have been there 30 years, don't care anymore, are hanging on for tenure. Does this make that process any easier? Or how do you guys self-police for, and every teacher knows who the teachers are, who aren't really doing the load anymore. How does that happen? Does this make it any easier to get rid of teachers who, in fact, do need to go?
Well, I think what it's going to do is going to identify teachers who actually need that additional support. And what's going to happen is there's going to be a lot of eyes on the process. So it's not that it's difficult to fire teachers. There's just a process, and I think that many evaluators have been overtaxed and under-resourced in making the effort to evaluate large groups of teachers on their own once a year and providing enough evidence to support that identification of teachers who are struggling at that level has just not been possible with the time constraints. Given that we're going to have an additional personnel involved in the evaluation, we may actually be able to see where our needs are in our community and either provide that support or identify those teachers if indeed they do need to transition out of our profession.
Finally, before I let you go, I mean, what has surprised you the most about either the process or the result?
You know, what surprised me the most is the fact that people consider this revolutionary or so incredibly innovative. For me, this is the right way to treat people. So it doesn't surprise me at all that this is the path that we have chosen to take. You got a bunch of people in a room who care deeply about the education of our children and the needs of our parents, our communities, and our educators. And we said, what do we need to do to make this system better? That's not a revolution. That's just taking the time to do right by the people who matter.